to another episode. This is episode 14 of the Matt and Joe Woodworking Fun Hour. As usual,
did you research that? Is that correct?
I have no clue if it's
correct.
I think the last episode was 13, right? I think it was.
Yeah, because it was just after Friday the 13th.
Yes, it was, or just before.
Yeah, right. I don't know. I don't remember. Oh, whatever.
So I'm Matt. That was Joe.
Hey, I'm Joe.
Joe Ferroni.
Yep, that's right.
So I was thinking about this today. How many different things were you called in school that rhyme with Ferroni?
Oh.
Like baloney?
Baloney, macaroni,
pepperoni.
You know, more infuriating than how people made fun of my name, because I really didn't give a shit about that. But it was more people would mispronounce it. They would just completely botch it. Ferrioni.
Ferrioni
is probably the most common, and I don't know where that comes from, because
like
there's no Y
or
there's no I. Yeah. There's it just yeah.
It's up the I at the end.
Yeah, I don't know. They don't get the second A and O together, so they just make shit up.
But yeah, okay.
Anyways,
well, I'm not going to call you Joe Bologna.
That's fine.
I used to eat bologna sandwiches as a kid. Now I couldn't ever eat bologna again. It's disgusting. So, anyways,
I'd agree.
Yeah, it's been 2 weeks since the last episode. We're back on schedule again.
Thank goodness.
I think we'll be keeping the schedule throughout the winter.
We're going to do our damnedest.
Yeah. So, normally we start off by talking about things we've been working on.
Yeah, what have you been up to?
Just for a quick minute. Well, I finished that wall cabinet
that
we talked about the last episode, and I hung it in my office.
How do you like it so far?
Oh, it's fantastic. It's beautiful.
It's everything you wanted it to be and more?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
It's great. It's fantastic.
So you mentioned just before we got going here that it was easy peasy hanging that thing?
Well, it was easy to hang. It was just very stressful. And I just for like the first couple of days, I just kept worrying that like the back was going to come off and the cabinet was going to fall and land on my, on my desktop computer and stuff. I was just freaking out about stuff like that, but you know, it's been up there for a while and, more than well over a week now.
And it's loaded with stuff and it still hasn't come down.
Correct.
Yeah. I do the same thing. I think I wonder if other people, they must, right?
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're like, I know I did it well. I've done this 100 times before, but.
Yeah. And I was a little worried about the back because piece of plywood that I use had a little bit of a bow in it. And, you know, I thought, okay, well, I'm going to glue it in, which is what I normally would do. And then instead of trying to clamp it up because it's kind of a large cabinet, I was like, I'm going to glue it in and then I'm going to, I stapled it into the rabbit.
Oh, interesting.
But it looked like...
Glue and staples?
Yeah, glue and staples. Uh-huh. And it kind of looked like it was the bow was kind of pulling the plywood out.
Oh.
But it's fine. Yeah, I should have clamped it, and then I would have had no worries. But, yeah,
nice.
So that, and I have been... not the week we're currently in.
Yes.
But the last week, I spent the whole week, 5 days, doing the photography for my Kumiko book.
Yeah.
And we got, there's a few photographs left that I need to do, but we got all of the, really 99% of the photography done, and which is fantastic. And that book will be out next year.
Okay.
And then this week, over the weekend I was at a craft fair, not selling stuff, but I was there working as a volunteer. And then all of this week I've been preparing for my next teaching gig.
I was just going to ask you where you headed next.
Yeah. Later in a couple of hours,
yep.
Less than 12 hours, I will be in my truck driving to Indiana to teach at the Mark Adams School of Woodworking. And I'm excited about that. It's my first time there. So,
you haven't taught there before?
Nope. Never taught there.
I thought you have.
No. So it's a,
that's cool.
I'm starting with a Saturday, Sunday Kumiko course.
Uh huh.
And then a 5-day box making course.
Wow.
So yeah.
For those of you who take these classes, do you take vacation for these classes? Or how does that? That's crazy.
Yeah.
That's 5 days. I couldn't take 5 days to go do something.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
is that what most people do?
If they're in a 5-day class,
yeah, they have to, right?
They have to,
or they're retired, or
there's a lot of retirees, I believe.
Okay.
But I do. I've had people, like when I was out in Colorado teaching at Anderson Ranch, there were a number of younger people in the class, and they were all, on vacation.
It's awesome.
Yeah.
I want to take
a really
vacation
nice.
Like that.
It would be fun, wouldn't it?
Like, Yeah, I don't have money to do that right now.
Yeah.
Damn kids.
Yeah, and then I get back from that, and I'm home for like 2 weeks, I guess. And then it's off to Germany.
Wow.
To do some demonstrations.
Cool. And drink some beer and eat
some strudel.
Yeah, strudel.
Yeah.
Wiener Schnitzel.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Sounds good.
Yeah.
All right. So my question for you about those classes, do you change anything when you're teaching versus when you're solo in the shop?
Like how I make stuff?
Yeah. How you make stuff, how you approach things. Do you see things differently now that you teach versus when you didn't?
Well, I definitely.
Well, you always worked for explaining things. You worked for magazines, so you had to kind of think differently.
Well, definitely working at the magazine, you had to think very critically and analytically about all the techniques and everything. So
did that help you become a better teacher, you think?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I was already a teacher before I got there.
Right.
And, so I already had that experience of taking something that you understood well and presenting it in a way that was easily consumed by someone or people who may not be as well, who are not as well versed in the subject matter as you are. And that's sort of what teaching is. It's like, I've got this in writing, and working at the fine woodworking is taking complex information, synthesizing it in a way, and then representing it in a very clear way that makes it seem really easy.
So you're going least common denominator in that point. Like you're assuming everybody has zero knowledge when you walk in, or there's
common denominator.
Lowest, least.
Yeah. Most, well, not exactly. It depends on the class really, but I do have to rethink, because here's the thing, like in my shop, when I'm making stuff, I know how to use a hand plane. I know how to use a chisel, right?
Right.
And all of my tools are sharp.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and a lot of the stuff that I do involves hand tools. And when you go teach, you cannot presuppose that the people you are teaching know how to use hand tools and have sharp hand tools.
Mm-hmm.
I found, usually hand tools are not sharp. Now, I think that also that's going to vary depending on where you're teaching, et cetera.
Sure.
But so I started to rethink how to teach, say, box making. Because I couldn't say, okay, well, now you need to hand plane the inside faces of your sides before we cut the joinery.
Right.
So I had to think, okay, well, if they can't do that, what can they do?
Mm-hmm.
So I did start to rethink how I do things in a class. Some of that has come back into my shop.
Okay.
I'll figure something out that works really well and is easier to do. And it'll come back into the way that I actually make stuff in my shop. But yeah, I mean, you do have to rethink what you do, because it's just some of the stuff I do requires a lot of skill or a lot of experience on a machine or something like that.
Yeah.
And you just can't do that in a class. So you do have to rethink it. But also, it definitely makes me think differently about furniture making and the techniques that I use. I mean, I was lucky that for 10 and a half years I worked at Fine Woodworking, where I was exposed to a broad variety of ways to do things.
Sure. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
I didn't just learn one way to do dovetails. I know a ton of ways to cut dovetails.
And you picked out what worked for you.
Well, what it does is when you understand like six different ways to cut dovetails, what you really end up understanding is what is critical about cutting dovetails.
Mm-hmm.
There's going to be things that are common to all of those techniques, and you realize, oh, that's the stuff that's really important, and here's how you do that properly.
Right.
And if you can do that correctly, then the specific tool you're using doesn't matter as much.
Okay.
So it helps me understand what's really critical about joinery, for example, or about surface prep. And teaching, you have to do the same thing. You have to take this information that you know, and a lot of it you don't realize you know, and you have to think very carefully about it and then figure out, how do I communicate this to a group of people that do not have the same level experience level that I do.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah.
And exactly. So that helps you, that helps me understand what I do in the shop better and helps me improve what I do in the shop.
Mm-hmm.
And that in turn helps me improve what I do in a classroom, which right. helps me. So it's like this circle that feeds upon itself back and forth, back and forth.
Have you had a moment in the shop where you were working on something and thought, oh, that'd be a really nice thing to teach them, or that's what I should.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's worked that way as well. When I'm sitting there at my bench, say like doing Kumiko or whatever, I think carefully about what is it that I'm doing right now? Oh, why is my finger there? Why am I holding the chisel like that? How is it that I pair from a corner to an angle on a little piece of wood?
Mm-hmm.
You know, what's the, and so, you think about all of that. And, that way when you go to teach it, you can say, okay, well, listen, you need to hold your chisel like this and here's why.
Sure.
And when you take you're pairing that angle onto the end of the little stick, this is the process that you want to do it by. And on the last pass, make sure you're pressing firmly down on the reference surface. And so I think more critically about what I'm doing, and make note of the stuff that is where I go, oh, that's really good. I'm doing that. And that allows me to work more accurately. And
right.
And that's the kind of stuff you want to pass along to your students.
Has anybody asked you a question in a class that you didn't think about why is your finger there? Has anybody asked you that and you're like, oh, that's a really good,
yeah, occasionally question. People, I can't think of an instance, but right. I know that I've been asked questions like, oh, why are you doing that? And I go, oh, yeah, all right, here's why I'm doing that.
Yeah.
And that's really the stuff that is most valuable to in a class, you
yep.
know.
Yep.
It's not really, hey, I went and I made this box or whatever. It's, hey, I went there
and I learned this.
And this guy showed me A, B, C, and D. And,
yeah.
And I do have people tell me, they'll tell me that. It's like, you know, I learned so much and it just totally changed the way I think about working at the table saw or whatever.
Yep.
You know?
Cool. So,
yeah, it is cool.
I worked more on my dovetails on my T-box, so that's almost done. I just haven't gotten to the point where I can sit down and glue it together.
Flawless segue.
Is it? Wasn't it? I don't think anybody will notice.
So you've been working on the dovetails, the case dovetails?
Yes.
Yeah.
And now I'm nervous that all my routed lines are not going to match up. That's my fear right now. I'm like, oh, crap. Like, what do I do if they don't line up?
Mm-hmm.
Has that happened to you? So, I mean, I cut them all lined up, but my fear is that you're going to join everything together and nothing's going to, it's going to be wonky.
Well, so what you could do is you want to dry fit the case.
Yep.
And while it's dry fit, you could make the dividers.
Okay.
And put them in and see if everything's square.
Okay.
If they're not, the thing you can do, and I've had to do this before, is just that dado that's misplaced, one thing you can do is just fill it in
and reroute and do it again
because you haven't glued it up yet.
Sure. Okay.
Something else that you can do, if you you cut your, let's say your divider is just a tiny little bit out of square, sure. vertically, right? Uh-huh. A vertical divider. And you have a tongue in the middle of the thickness that goes into the dado.
Yep.
What you can do is take material off one side of that, whichever side you need to, of that tongue, one of the tongues,
yep.
so that you can square it up. And okay. then once you got it to where it's square, you can fill in the other side
with the what you took off.
Yeah, so you're, in a sense, you're shifting the location okay. of the tongue so that it's not centered anymore, and that brings the divider square. Now, if it's really out of square, you can't do that.
Yeah,
I'm talking
yeah.
about just infinitesimally out of square.
Mm-hmm.
If it's really out of square, then you need to fill in, just glue a piece in there with the same grain orientation.
Yep.
Hand plane it down, and then reroute your
do it all over
your
again.
Dado. Yeah.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
More work.
Yes. Well,
I haven't noticed that anything is. It's just my fear, and that's why I'm like, oh god, now I've got the dovetails done. I got to glue it up, and what if everything's out of whack? Well,
don't glue it up yet. Yeah, you can fit your dividers and stuff while it's dry fit.
Right. Exactly.
You know, assuming that the joints close up and everything.
Yep.
Yeah.
Great. Awesome. Mm-hmm. All right. And on top of that, so I'm getting my office out of my basement. And oh, yeah. to move that, to actually
I'm moving
get that.
Into your basement.
Dear God, no. That would be terrible. But I'm building a desk. So I went and picked up some ash yesterday. And I thought, all right, I'll start with the base. I went in thinking I'm going to get some white oak to make this whole thing. And the white oak didn't look particularly great. There wasn't a whole lot to pick from. So I skipped over and they had a crap ton of ash. So I bought enough and I bought four pieces, not by board feet or anything like mm-hmm. that. So I bought for what I wanted and I knew I was going to make my apron from these parts and my legs from this part. And then I was thinking, do I make the top out of ash? It's going to be a very light colored desk. And I'm thinking where it's going to fit into my room, blah, blah, blah. What wood goes with ash?
I have many other questions.
First. Oh, please go. All right, fine.
All right. So you went to the lumberyard yesterday.
Yes.
And you bought some ash.
Yes.
Is that place close to your office? Isn't it? I guess it's not too far.
It's not super
you
far.
Go right up 72 to 4 yeah. and then yeah. go 4 into Burlington.
Yes. Yeah.
People are like, "Where? What in the hell are they talking
yeah,
about?
Yeah. yeah. It's a town. It's like a town away from Bristol, but it's like in the sticks a little bit. So.
Yeah.
That was your question?
No.
Oh, okay.
Do you know what the table looks like?
The desk?
Yeah, the desk.
Yeah, I sketched something out, sure.
You sketched something out?
Uh-huh.
Okay, well, at least you did that.
Yeah, yeah.
But when you sketched it out, you didn't have ideas in your head about, oh, this is what I want the top to be?
I wanted it to be all white oak. And then when that changed, I was like, maybe I'll do the whole thing in ash. And then I had my two boys with me, and it was a little bit. They were jumping off shit and hitting each other with sticks, and there were guys driving around with forklifts. So I couldn't really focus. So I was like, all right, I'm gonna get the ash, start with the base. Maybe I'll come back for the ash to finish the top.
Mm-hmm.
But then I thought maybe this is my opportunity to do something else. So I was wondering if I dye the base like a black or something like that, so you can see the grain. But
ebonized ash looks nice.
Yeah.
There's other things you could do. Yeah, and so you wanted to have a white oak table, a white oak
originally, yeah, yeah, yeah. And it's like desk. Shaker style, like the legs kind of taper. It's very simple. Yeah. I didn't want it. I want to basically get myself into my office and working. And if I,
right.
I said if it was a prototype and there was things I liked, I'd make a new one or whatever.
But, well, if it's shaker style, why not milk paint the base?
Oh God damn it! You and your milk paint.
I know. It would look awesome, and then you could.
And then what? Up the top, I could do anything.
You could do anything. Do white oak.
Son of a gun.
All yeah, right. Do quarter sawn white oak or whatever.
See, they didn't have quarter sawn. That was kind of the reason I avoided it.
Oh, they didn't have it at
no.
all.
No, and then I was thinking rip and flip the top.
Oh my God,
that'd
yeah.
take forever, right?
Yeah, that would take forever.
Yeah, so I was thinking stuff like that, or do I veneer it? Do I? So I don't know. I'm not asking for answers. I'm just wondering if you have other thoughts.
Well, I mean,
but I want it simple and just I want to glue stuff up and be done with it.
If they had 12 quarter
white oak
or ash.
Uh-huh.
So, it, you know,
no 12 quarter. I bought some 8 quarter for my legs.
Yeah. They didn't have any 12 quarter.
Not that I saw.
If they had 12 quarter something, I would rip and flip that and make a tabletop out of it. Because that's wide enough that
you wouldn't be there forever making.
Yeah, you wouldn't have to have a, you know, 300, you know. Like 31 inch strips, it, you know, it'd be 10
right,
pieces,
right.
You know, you could do it in sections. And you could do, so if like, you know, now I'm thinking about, well, what I do. Okay. So let's say I milk paint the base.
Okay.
It would look nice with a quarter, you know, a riff sawn or quarter sawn top. And you could with 12 inch stock do that. Now I know that they have, 16 quarter pine, but I don't know if I'd make a top out of
no,
pine.
No, see, if I were going to make, I use pine for the bottom if I were going to do anything,
yeah.
just for ease of use. But the ash was cheap, so it's
cheap
heavy
ash.
As hell. Cheap as hell.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I don't know. I wasn't looking for a definitive answer, just ideas.
Right.
And then joinery. I do not want to cut mortise and tenons into the ash.
Okay.
Do you have any other? I don't want to use pockets.
You could cut tenon and mortise.
Ooh, there you go. All right.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. You need to do mortise and tenon joinery unless you have a domino. But yeah. Anyways, this is kind of rambling now.
Yeah, it's all right. Whatever.
Do we?
So, I just don't have a good router to do that stuff. And I know I've borrowed yours. I don't want to ask to borrow it again.
Well, that little router would not
go through the ash.
Well, wouldn't. And that's not for mortising.
No,
it's not powerful enough. Yeah,
got it.
Yeah, I mean, ideally, you would if you have a drill press, you could drill them out and square them up. You know, with a chisel. You could use my drill press to do that. I don't have a mortiser. I wish I did.
I actually do have a mortiser.
Do you really? Like a benchtop mortiser?
Yeah. I kind of forgot I have it. It's a cheapy one a buddy gave me, but yeah, that's, right. I could try that.
All right. So table construction. So yes. Do you know, all right. So apron, do you know where, like, so you want something, the point of an apron is really to prevent racking, you know, of the legs, and what's critical there is the amount of shoulder that you have. So, you know, like a 3-inch tall apron,
yeah,
where you effectively get 3 inches of shoulder,
sure,
is better than a 1-inch apron,
right?
You get
right.
So, but you don't have to do it all together. So you could like split your apron into two different pieces and have like a 2-inch and a 1-inch. So
yeah,
but if you start to put space in between two aprons, that actually sort of increases the effective.
Yeah, because I was thinking about putting, I guess it would be a rail down lower on the back end of the desk so that it, just to keep the legs from wobbling there. And I saw some examples that looked really nice that way. But
yeah, so in some ways if you have like 10 inches of space in between two aprons, you actually is sort of like, it's like having an extra 10 inches of shoulder.
Yeah.
It's kind of like that. So yeah, you could do, I wouldn't just do it at the back. I'd do it around the two sides as well.
Right, on the... Yep.
Yeah, okay. But you got to keep in mind if you're tapering your legs,
there's not a lot of meat to do that with.
There's not a lot of meat to do that with, and also you'd have to do angled shoulders on those pieces that went around.
This is great.
Yeah.
It sounds very easy.
Right. Yeah.
I'll have it done by tomorrow.
When you introduce an angle or a curve into a piece, you can greatly complicate things without even knowing it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And slow down the construction process.
I love Philip Morley's tables. He kind of has these curves that go on his legs. It almost makes it look like it's bow-legged.
No, Phil is bow-legged.
Oh, okay.
It's from all the ponies he rides.
Okay. Poor Phil. But I see, like, when he does that with his pieces, it's a really good look. But then that's the reason. I was like, I think I could do a straight angle better than I could a curve, at least at this point in my woodworking.
When you taper a leg, like on shaker stuff, usually the outside faces are straight. And it's the two inside ones that are tapered.
Right.
So that would be a problem. Not an insurmountable problem.
Just something to think about.
Yeah, something to think about. Like if I were to do that now, I would cut butt joints essentially and use a domino.
Yeah.
And that would make it super easy.
Okay.
So,
do you know anybody that has domino?
I do know someone with a domino. Okay. Yeah.
All right.
So what I would do in that case is use the domino on the stretchers before cutting the angles onto them.
Yep.
And then you just push it together and it's perfect.
That's not bad.
The domino is like, it can effectively revolutionize the way you make furniture.
Sure.
Yeah, it just totally can change the way you do it.
Awesome. All right. So where are we going after that? What else were we talking about? I thought that would take longer, to be honest. I thought you'd give me more shit for different things.
There's a lot more we can talk about with table making.
Okay, so with the apron, so I bought some rough cut lumber. That's part of the reason I pulled the trigger on the ash, because they were going to mill it all up this morning. And I was like, well, I'd rather take a 6-quarter piece than what they're going to make it into tomorrow and have my way with it instead of them determining it.
Have your way with that.
Yeah. So
large board
in pieces, especially on an apron, on a table, does it matter how thick I leave the aprons in terms of their thickness, dimensionally?
Visually, like, no.
Right. But is that something that you would make a point to do your way instead of just leave it as fat as possible?
Well, I mean, the thickness in part is going to be determined by how thick the leg is at top.
Sure.
You know, so it can only, you know, but.
Right. I can't put a 2-inch piece into a 1.5-inch leg.
Correct.
Yeah, okay.
That'd
just be dumb.
But I would go for, as long as it was strong, make it as light as you can. Right?
Yeah.
Because you have to move this thing.
Yeah.
And
so I thought the opposite. I thought make the base heavy since it's going to sit and you don't want it to move. But if you think light, then.
I mean, you can. It's just, you know.
Preference.
Yeah. I mean, I guess maybe for a desk, it's not going to get super thin. You know, mm-hmm. It's like you could have probably a 7/8 of an inch thick apron.
Right.
You know, and that would be fine because visually you can't see it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's not an issue. And the thicker the apron, the more options you have. And the thicker the leg, the more options you have with joinery.
Right. Yeah. Okay. It definitely determines that stuff.
If you get really, really thin, then you start, you know, you have to make really thin tenons because you then have to, you can't put a really wide mortise in a very thin leg.
Right.
Because it would make it too weak.
Right. Exactly.
So, yeah. So you have to think about that. Like, I have to have strong joinery. And what, if I have a leg this size, what's the widest or thickest tenon I can put in there?
Mm-hmm.
You know? And also, if it's like a 1.5-inch square, 1.25-inch square at the top, you know, your tenon can't even be that long because you got two tenons coming in that leg.
Right.
And even if you miter them, they still are not going to be very long.
Does the length of the tenon affect the strength of that joint? Past a certain point, I'm guessing it doesn't. There's a diminishing return there, I guess.
Yeah.
You said the shoulder is important.
The shoulder is, but also the length. The length of the tenon does matter.
Yeah, you can have a 1/4-inch tenon.
Correct.
And hope that it's going to hold on for dear
right.
life.
Right. Okay. Yeah. You need to have, you know, a good 1 to 1.5, 2-inch tenon probably, but you obviously can't get that long.
Right.
And there are tiny little federal tables with petite little legs and very short tenons, and they hold up fine. But
is it worth pinning a tenon at that point, or will that?
It doesn't hurt, but
or draw boring like
yeah, if, okay. You know, it's something that, I might do from behind so you don't see them.
Excuse me.
Gonna pin it from behind. Peg it from behind.
Ooh. Oh. that goes into a weird territory. All right. Yeah. Okay. So not to show that joinery instead. You prefer not to show pins?
Yeah, that's my style. It's okay. Very clean. And, mm-hmm. So I wouldn't want pegs being shown.
Okay.
You know, but if I was making a shaker style piece, I would probably
keep it clean. Gotcha.
I would buy a show with the pegs. That,
okay.
You know, like if I did a green milk paint base, like apple pegs would look really nice.
Okay.
I do not know anybody with apple, so don't even fucking ask.
So what else goes? I guess it could be any top if I milk paint it. Damn it. You and your milk paint.
Mm-hmm. But you could.
How's milk paint on ash? It's all right?
It's fine.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
You got anything else about tables you want to tell me?
Right now? Well, so you want to think about...
Any things to consider, yeah.
How are you going to attach the top?
That's going to be my next... That was going to be my next question, actually.
So an easy way to do it is when you have the aprons before you glue the base up, you just run a groove down the length of the apron, you know, like a 1/2-inch to 3/4 inches down.
Yep, sure.
And then you can just make little buttons. And they fit into that groove, and you screw it to the top, and that allows the top to expand and contract.
It's kind of like a Z or S shaped.
No, it'd be like button. So let's say that you put that groove 3/4 inches down
sure.
from the top.
Yeah,
edge,
I know exactly what you're saying.
And it's like 1/8 inch wide, uh-huh. and let's say 1/4 inch deep.
Okay.
What I would do is mill some material to like 3/4 inch.
Mm-hmm.
And cut out little squares, probably.
Yep.
You know, maybe something that's, or maybe something that's like 1.5 inches long, maybe 1 inch long and 1 inch square, let's say that.
Okay.
Then I would mill up some material that fit into the groove.
Uh-huh.
And I would just glue that to the bottom of the block. So it's kind of like a block with a little bill on it.
Yep.
Or a tongue on
yep,
it.
Yep, exactly.
And then that just fits right in there.
And that allows for expansion and contraction.
Allows for expansion and contraction.
And you can still pick up the table from the top and it doesn't
And I would detach. Do it on all four aprons if I could, you know, depending on what your front apron's like, if there's a drawer or whatever, you can still do it. But you don't glue them into the groove. You can glue them to the top, though. Or you could screw it to the top. You know, either way is fine.
Okay, so I'll complicate it a little bit more. I'm debating whether or not I want to put a drawer on the front.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I was thinking about cutting an opening, placing a face, making a drawer. Now, the one thing I was thinking is making a continuous grain drawer so that it looks seamless into the apron.
Yeah.
But I was thinking like ripping a thin strip to be the bottom, and then ripping a wider strip that would be the width of the height of the drawer, and then another, and then cut that middle section out to make a drawer.
Yeah, so that's how that's done. You would take...
Okay.
So if that apron, you know, whatever it is, let's say it's 5 inches, just for the sake of argument. Yeah, you would rip off, and you wanted a 3-inch drawer. So you would rip off an inch from either side. Mm-hmm. And
bandsaw, table saw?
I would do table saw.
Okay.
And you have to remember, you have to take the kerf into account. So if you wanted 5 inches in the end and you're going to make those two rip cuts, you need to make it like 5 1/4.
Right.
I would actually start with something wider.
And fit it to that.
Like rip off an inch. Mm-hmm. I'd probably go to the 5 1/4, rip an inch off either side. Mm-hmm. And then that leaves you with the 3 inches in the middle. Cross cut it to get your drawer front out.
So what if the piece bows to hell? Don't use that piece.
Yeah, you would know it was bowing before you did all that. Okay. But if the strip's bow, you can still glue that back on and have it be straight. I mean, you would just have to get some cauls in across the top and bottom surfaces to keep it aligned, and then clamp it up and glue it. Glue it back together.
Mill it or run it over the planer before in between, or
no,
try not to.
I would,
because then you'd lose more.
You lose more material. And so to do that, I would use something that was really straight grain, because you'll notice the glue lines less.
Okay.
So something like riff sawn, quarter sawn. But if you're going to paint it, you don't even have to do that.
Right.
Yeah. Or if you were going to stain it. I'd be a little hesitant to do that and then stain it. I'd be worried that maybe the stain would highlight, like ebonize
the groove.
It.
Yeah.
It would highlight those glue lines.
If I ebonized it or just stained it?
If you ebonized it.
Really? You think so?
Yeah. Or stained it, yeah.
Yeah, interesting.
I mean, ebonizing is a two-part staining process, yeah.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. Okay, lots to think about here.
Yes. That's why, you know, really I was getting it when you said you went and bought lumber. I was like, he hasn't really thought through all of this. And
maybe half-assed because the boys were with me. So will maple go with ash?
Ugh.
That's what I was thinking.
Yeah, I would not. No. Because
different colors.
Similar, they're very close in color, but not like
the grain.
Ash is more like butter.
Yeah.
You know, in the color.
Yeah.
It has that yellow to it. And ash is a very, maybe has more like like a blue in it. So it's kind of like a cold.
You mean maple?
Yeah, maples. Yeah. Kind of like this, has a cold look to it.
Okay.
And
they may not
a cool,
well
like a temperature color. Temperature of the color. But also, maple is a very tight-grained wood, and ash is a big pore. Not tight grain, but very small pores. You can't even see the pores, right?
Exactly.
And ash has those big open pores, and I don't think that looks good together.
Interesting. All right, so maybe I milk paint it and then maple for the top. I'm trying to think of something. It's going to be a desk, so I don't want it to be soft when you write on it or anything like that.
Right. Well, yeah, I mean, I would order like a... Some kind of cup, you know, something to put over it. Like you get a piece of glass and put it down on top of it.
Yeah.
Just where you're going to, you know, like where you're, not the whole thing.
Sure.
But like on my drafting table, my drawing table, I got a mat to put down. It's a specific type of mat that people use on drafting
not
tables.
Not a Matt Kenny.
I do sometimes lay on it.
Okay.
I take pictures, shirtless pictures of myself and send them to Vladimir Putin.
Oh, dear God. Wow. Okay. Well, people are going to be showing up at our door soon.
Yeah.
Cool. There they are.
Somebody's here.
Hello. All right. Well, I think that's it. I'm probably going to ask you more questions at some point, maybe in text and
yeah,
tell you that it's not working or something.
But. Yeah. Well, So we need to get back. This just makes me one. You need to finish your tea cabinet.
Yes,
you're lucky that I had so much prep work to do for Mark Adams this week because I was going to finish that.
Well, I'm glad that you cabinet. Didn't.
All I have left to do is make my pulls and my drawer bottoms.
Ooh,
and I think I told you I was thinking about making a box that slides in behind the teacups so that space isn't so deep.
Mm-hmm.
I'm thinking about doing that. Like, I'd probably make it out of plywood so that I could get it to fit really tight and like do veneer on it or something.
Oh God.
All right. It'd be really freaking awesome.
We curse on this.
I'm going to get sharks with lasers on their freaking heads.
Laser beams on their freaking heads.
Laser beams.
Those are great movies.
Oh, yeah.
I just asked my brother to dig out all the DVDs we have because I'm digitizing everything and putting them on computer. And he lives next door to me. So we don't tell anybody. But
it's really cute because at nighttime in the summer, they open their windows. It's like, good night, Joe.
No, we have actually run out of coffee and my brother's launched a bag of coffee from his house during a blizzard to my house so we could have some coffee. But we actually run a Ethernet cable from my house to his and we split the bill that way. But it's he's on my network. Mm-hmm. So I have a server with all our movies on it and he can watch them from his house.
Oh, nice.
So,
I've never met your brother.
No, nope. We'll probably keep it that way. No, I'm just kidding. I meant to say this last time. My parents were at our house a couple weeks ago, and we're sitting in his living room just hanging out, and he goes, "Hey, so I just realized your podcast is like a real thing." And I go, "What the hell does that mean?" And he goes, "Well, you have like lots of reviews, and it's like 5 stars. I was like, "Oh, I haven't looked at our reviews in a while." He goes, "Yeah, but you have like a lot of people listen to it." And I'm like, "Yeah." I was like, as far as I know, they do. And he just started laughing. He thought it was like some fly by night.
We don't look at the numbers, yet. Do we?
I haven't looked at the numbers since before the summer. Yeah. So I'll look again.
That's when you told your brother, "Yeah, Matt Kinney's really famous."
That's what I told him. Yeah, pretty much. I was like, "It's not about me, brother.
I'm not famous."
Yeah, we got to check. I got to check the numbers. Not that I really care because I'm doing it for hopefully teaching some people stuff, not for fame.
Yeah, I haven't looked at the reviews. I did respond to a review of my book on Amazon because it was making me angry.
I think was this a while ago? I think you told us.
I just
us
did
about
it this week.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, so because it's the top review and it's like a 1-star review. And I'm like, dude, I'm like, Amazon, there's all these 5-star reviews. And yet this asshole who doesn't know how to read and doesn't have this very poor reading comprehension.
Yeah.
Writes a review because, it wasn't the book he wanted.
Yep.
He can't separate that from whether or not it's a good book.
Yep.
You know.
Well, it's a decent book. It's fine.
It is. It's okay.
I bought it.
You did.
I bought it.
I'm not signing it.
That's fine. I don't care.
Jerk.
I don't want your 1-star book anyways.
I just thought of something else, but now I can't remember.
Oh, well, I was going to say, guy reached out to me last week, after we posted the last episode. His name's Mike Tolchinski on Instagram.
Oh, yeah.
And he was like, "Hey," he's like, "I did the rip and flip on something." He's like, "I'm glad you guys talked about it." Like, and he sent some pictures. So it was just cool to see that someone used it and that he got a kick out of it. He's like, "I used it for a bunch of stuff. I think it was for a little hall table he made, and the top is all rip and flip. It looks
rip and flip is much better than rip and fart."
Yeah. I mean, depends on who's doing it.
I don't know.
If I'm ripping farting, it feels great.
Yeah. There was some, maybe it'll come to me before we finish.
You want to go 3 things to know? Yeah. The joke or the stat or all three?
Let's do 3 things to know.
Okay, go.
Joe and I both live in Connecticut. 3 things to know about Connecticut.
And we've both lived in other places too.
Yeah. So I think one of the things that still strikes me about Connecticut, because you think, oh, it's New England, it's near New York City, it's just this big, nasty concrete playground.
Yeah.
And that's true down on the coast where it's horrible.
Where all the New York people live during the day.
I would never live down on the coast here. But where I live in Northwest Connecticut, Litchfield County, it's very green, hilly, like big hills,
yep.
And beautiful.
Yes.
Very rural,
yep.
In a way.
We live in a hardwood forest.
Yeah, yeah. Tons of houses, but you can't, a lot of times, unless you're in a little town, you don't know it because they're all hidden by the trees.
Right, yeah.
It's a beautiful, beautiful, Connecticut's a beautiful state.
Yes. But what are the 3 things? That's not one of them, was it?
Yeah, that was one.
Oh, okay.
Right. Yeah, because if you haven't been to Connecticut, it's nice to know. But as beautiful as it is, and I do love it. I love like the Farmington River. I go fly fishing there. It's just an amazing, beautiful place. It is absurdly, ridiculously, stupidly expensive here.
Yep, it is.
Yeah,
it is.
It's just dumb.
Taxes are high. Everything's expensive.
Yeah. Yeah.
When I travel for work and you go like somewhere Midwest or down South, you're like, whoa, things are cheap here.
Yeah. It's like, I don't mind paying my fair share of taxes. I would pay more in taxes just to have freaking centralized healthcare.
Yeah.
But in like to say have a 4-week paid vacation every year, like people in Europe do.
It's not
a bad thing. I pay a lot in taxes here, and what does it go to? I'm pretty sure it just goes to clearing snow out in the summer, in the winter.
Well, now they're clearing all the trees on the middle of the highway. Have you seen that?
Yeah. They've been doing that for
a while. I looked up that information. They're spending a lot of money on that.
Yeah. So it's Connecticut, for all of its beauty and all of its positives, is so expensive that
young people don't want to live here.
Young people don't want to live here. And when my two kids are both in college,
they're going somewhere else.
I'm out of here. I'm out of Connecticut. I'm going to go somewhere. If I'm going to spend a lot to live somewhere, I at least want to live somewhere. I was about to say somewhere nice after I just said it is beautiful here.
Yeah.
But like the coast, Pacific Northwest, like, yeah, exactly. Or something like that, you know? Yep. And this actually, another thing that still strikes me about Connecticut is it's this disorganized jumble of small towns connected by small two-lane roads that are curvy and go up over hills. And
exactly.
It takes forever to get anywhere in Connecticut.
It does, although it only takes, 2.5 hours to drive end-to-end? Long ways?
If that, yeah.
I mean, you can go.
That's about right. Maybe 2.5 hours.
Depending on traffic. Don't go 95. You'll take you a lot longer.
I mean, let's see. It takes about an hour to get from the New York border to Waterbury, which is roughly where I live.
Yep.
From Waterbury to Hartford is probably 40 minutes without traffic.
Yeah. And then another 45 to get to
the Mass border. So that's on I-84 to the turn to the Mass turn.
That's going west to east.
Yeah. That's about right. Yeah. It's a small state. But so, you know, I go to Conway Hardwoods over in Gaylordsville, which is maybe 20 miles from here.
Yeah.
It's a little bit further than that, actually.
As the crow flies,
it's like 20 miles. The drive is roughly just over 25 miles. It takes every bit of 50 minutes to an hour to get there.
Yep.
And that's just because it's just
two-lane roads. There's no lights. It's usually just like you might hit a handful of lights on the way there.
Yeah.
But it's just slow. It's,
curvy,
get stuck behind two-lane school
roads.
Bus.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You get stuck behind like a dump truck on one of these roads. You're not passing it.
Nope.
And it's driving 20 miles an hour.
Solid double lines in the middle. You can't go around.
Yeah.
Yep.
You're just stuck. Oh, yeah. It's horrible to drive in Connecticut.
But it's pretty.
I remember the first time I was ever in Connecticut, I was driving from South Carolina to Maine. This was back before, like in 2003.
Uh-huh.
I was going on vacation with my then wife. So we stayed in Brooklyn at her mom's childhood home for a while. Then we drive up to Maine. No problem. We're coming back from Maine, and it's nighttime, and we're going back to Brooklyn. It's like midnight, and I think we were on Route 8. Like we came down 84
to 95
to Route 8 to 95. And I think it was on Route 8, or it was on 95. It was just dead stop traffic.
In the middle of the night.
Middle of the night.
Yep.
That's Connecticut. Oh, my God.
Yeah. It's a drive-through state, and our roads are beat up for it.
Yeah. For sure. Yeah, the roads can be in really bad shape. But also winter. I mean, winters destroy roads.
Absolutely.
So here's the bonus thing to know about Connecticut. They have very uncreative town names.
Yep.
So I live in a town called Watertown, which is right next to Waterbury.
Yep, and I live in West Hartford, which is right next to Hartford, next to East Hartford.
And then there's New Hartford, which is actually not near Hartford.
Which is like 40 minutes away from Hartford. West Hartford and East Hartford.
So there's Waterbury, then the town that Mike lives in, Middlebury.
Yep.
Then there's Southbury. And there is Woodbury, and there's Roxbury. These are all like next to each other. And then there's Danbury, which is a little bit further down the road. There's tons of berries.
And burries.
Burries.
Burries and berries.
Yeah, everyone says berry, but it's B-U-R-Y.
Yeah, I joked when I first moved here. I told my wife this weekend as we were driving from New Hampshire home. I said, I joked when I first moved here, everything was a town, a ton, or a berry.
That's kind of true. Yeah, there's not. Is. Yeah. But then there's like, you got Milford, which is down on the coast, yep. right by New Haven, sort of. But then there's New Milford which is in Northwest Connecticut, yep. like an hour and a half away.
Yep.
And like there's Preston and New Preston. There's Canaan down on the coast. And New Canaan. There's yep. North Canaan, which is up by Massachusetts.
Yep.
There's just like very few. It's like someone, okay, I lived in Canaan, but I didn't like it. There was a dispute there because they were too Protestant. So we moved up by Massachusetts, but we wanted to feel like we were studying, so we just called it New Canaan.
Right, right.
You know, it's like,
it's probably exactly how it went
probably,
down.
Yeah, it probably was like, there was a, because they had a disagreement over, you know, whether or not to have canned yams at Thanksgiving, you know, whatever. But it's like all these unoriginal names. It's kind of crazy.
Yep. That's yeah. Connecticut
there's
for you.
There's Simsbury. Which is up by the airport.
Airport, yeah. Yeah. I lived there for a little while.
Yeah, there's Windsor Locks.
Yep.
Which is, I guess that's a...
Interesting name.
Interesting name. Enfield.
Enfield, Windsor Locks, yep. I'm trying
there's,
to think.
But there's so many small towns in Connecticut. You could... Just in my town, Watertown, there's a part of town called Oakville. But the people who live in Oakville mm-hmm. are very strongly opinionated on the fact that they live in Oakville, and they do not like to be told. They don't like to say they live in Watertown. They say, I live in Oakville. You know,
even though it's like probably within Watertown. Or,
yeah, it is. Yeah, it's yeah. part of our school district. It's part of Watertown. Yeah, yeah. And then like say, so I worked for 10.5 years in Newtown, right? So Newtown is a big political area, so to speak.
Sure.
But within Newtown, you have Newtown, you mm-hmm. have Sandy Hook, mm-hmm. you have. I always call it Hobbington, but it's not what it's... There's all these little neighborhoods, and they still go by those names.
Yeah.
So, like, you ask someone, like, oh, where do you live? They'll say, I live in Sandy Hook.
Right.
They won't say, I live in Newtown.
Right, even though
Sandy Hook is part of Newtown.
Yeah, that's... Connecticut's strange like that.
Yeah, and people are very...
territorial.
Territorial like yeah. that.
Possessive of their territory.
Something else that struck me as interesting when I came up here, I met someone, and she asked me... what are you?
The hell's that mean?
I was just like, I'm American? She goes, no, what's your background? I'm like, I'm an American. But like in New England, people are really proud, I guess is definitely one way to say it, but very much aware of
their heritage.
Yeah, like yeah. my ancestors.
I'm Italian.
Yeah.
yeah.
I'm Italian.
I get a lot of comments
I'm Irish.
About that. Yeah.
I'm, you know, it's like in... down in the South, it's not like that. They focus on something else, which is, you know, unpleasant.
Right. Right.
But, yeah, that always struck me because I never thought of myself as an Irish American.
Yeah.
Or a Polish American.
Yeah.
Which I have both in my recent history. But I'm just an American. So that's something else that's different. Anyway.
Interesting.
Connecticut, great place to visit.
Great place. Maybe not the best place. I like it with the kids and stuff like that. When I was younger, I was like, I'm getting the hell out of here.
Yeah.
Yep.
All but right. Then we should
go. All right. Joke.
Care.
Joke stat.
All right. Joke of the day.
This come is... visit Connecticut.
Yes.
Visit CT.com.
Connecticut. Come smell the excitement. So the joke of the day. So this married couple are out and about on town, and the wife turns to her husband and says, "You see that drunk guy over there?" He's like, "Yeah, yeah." She goes, "Before I met you, he asked me to marry him. And I said no." And the husband said, "Wow." And he's still celebrating.
All right. That's pretty funny.
That's pretty good. All
right. That's not bad. Stat of the podcast.
Stat of the podcast. 57% of all green woodworkers think sexy bodger is a good Halloween costume. 0% of their partners do.
What's a sexy bodger?
Well, a bodger is like a green woodworker. They would go out in the woods and they'd make a tree and a chair in the woods and they'd bring it back.
But they're called bodger?
Yeah, bodger. It's a British term.
Okay, cool. That's why I don't know. I'm not British.
I almost went with sexy Peter Follansby. Almost.
Decided not to.
Yeah, because that's actually going to be my Halloween costume.
Ooh,
this year.
That sounds good.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. Cool. All right. Well, have fun.
Or sexy Ben Strano.
have fun in Indy.
Yeah.
And have more fun driving there.
Ugh.
Dude, I don't look forward to that for you.
Podcasts and books.
Yeah, there
makes
you go.
Makes the time go by fast, man. It makes it go really fast.
Books on... people still call them books on tape, which I think is really fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Audiobooks.
All right, cool. All right, see you in the next one, guys.
Bye.
Bye.